Family finances are important at any age, particularly when the finances involve adult children and aging parents. And we're going to be talking about some tips and traps of financial security in later years. Maybe you're a little older, or maybe you have some parents who are a little older and you'd like to help them with their own financial security a bit. Well, we have two experts for you today. Karen Goebel, who has been a guest many times on this program, professor and family consumer economics specialist. Karen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Nice to have you with us. And we're welcoming to the microphones assistant professor Mike Gutter, a family financial management specialist. They are both in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison and UW Extension Family Living Program. So a pleasure to have them with us. And they're both speakers at the Resource Fair for Seniors that's coming up this weekend in Sun Prairie. And we'll be talking a bit. We talked about it yesterday on the program, and we'll certainly tell you some more about it as we move along. But if you have some questions about, well, how to care for your own financial security in later years, or maybe how you can help your parents do that, or older friends, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments, and we will be happy to get you on the air. You know, that's a hard conversation to bring up with a parent. Karen Goebel?
Well, I think it is. In some families, these sensitive topics are just not discussed. Sensitive topics like money and end-of-life kinds of decisions. And I think families have usually unwritten rules and rituals in terms of who talks to whom about what and so forth. So I think you do have to know your own family in terms of how to approach this. Sometimes it's when another family has a crisis and somebody is unable to make their own decisions, and you suddenly have this I say, window in that you could talk to your parents about what they see ahead and what they would want if they were in that kind of situation. And certainly I think everyone's concerned about dementia. And perhaps Alzheimer's down the road. And so people see others in that state and realize that they should have started sooner, you know, that it's never too soon to plan. The other thing is if you approach it from the idea that I'm reviewing my estate planning or I'm reviewing my record keeping, and it just occurred to me, Mother, that perhaps we should sit down and make a list of what you own and what you owe and where things are and how they're titled and so forth. So any of those could be an entree for starting the conversation. And frequently, I think you need to kind of make an appointment. I think you sort of need to set up a meeting and make it clear that you are going to discuss these sensitive topics. Sometimes they just don't evolve on their own.
And probably not the best time to do it is right after Thanksgiving dinner or at a time like that, Mike Gutter.
Yeah, I agree. You know, a lot of times, especially things that are very private when they're sprung upon us without any forewarning, especially when we're very much in a relaxed mood, our first instinct is going to be to avoid the conversation. We don't want to get into it at that time. Now isn't a great time to discuss it. So I think, you know, Karen's comment was, you know, very on point that you really want to kind of set it up in advance, not only just so that people can mentally prepare, but also so that they could potentially get organized. If you really want to ask them some serious questions, they might become flustered if they don't really know where the information is. So it can be helpful to kind of give a little bit of advance notice.
Yeah, and, you know, someone called me and said, well, let's discuss your financial situation. It would take me a little bit of time to pull everything together, too, and from the file cabinets or the box in the basement or what have you.
Well, I think it's also people are looking at independence and control.
Yeah.
And managing your money and making those kinds of decisions is, you know, one of the last things you want to give up. You'll accept physical help and you'll even give up the car keys, I believe, before you'll give up control of your financial information and management.
And sometimes it comes up because it has to come up because children notice that there are expenditures going out from people that you wonder, you know, where did this, you know, why did this happen, and what kind of a ripoff, quote, quote, if it is going on here?
Are you talking about the freezer full of meat that I discovered at my mother's home? And she seemed to have no paperwork on this and didn't know whether she'd, and she didn't write a check, so she must have paid, I don't know. But this is exactly what I teach, you know. I warn people about this, and then I go home and find my mother in the same perplexing situation with all this meat that she and her sister couldn't manage to cook so that it was edible.
Oh.
That's what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of it. That's kind of it. And, Michael, you come across that sort of thing in your experience?
I think there's that, side of it, too, where we recognize that people may be making less than, you know, good decisions. They might be doing things that are trying to make themselves feel good at the time. And so it's important sometimes to monitor even just some impulsive types of purchases that if people don't plan for when they're on tight budgets can get them into trouble as well. But I think also, you know, there's also that other side of it, too, where if you start seeing things that seem a little odd on someone's expenditures, you have to make sure, of course, that they're actually making them in the first place. And that can be a little bit of a concern as well, especially as our finances become more and more complex to keep track of. It can become quite easy to watch all of a sudden something happening and you don't really notice it for a few months.
Yeah, we're talking today with Michael Gutter and Karen Goebel from the University of Wisconsin about tips and traps of financial security in later years. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Maybe you've got an experience to share of your own, or maybe you've got a question as to how to approach a particular situation that you have, and we'd certainly welcome those comments as well, again at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Karen, you recommend a book, by the way. It's How to Care for Your Parents' Money While Caring for Your Parents by Sharon Burns and Ray Forge.
That is one of several books that are out there right now that are trying to work with adult children and aging parents. And Extension has a program coming up soon that we're adapting for Wisconsin. And so I think there are more and more publications like this. And that in particular looks at managing their money as well as how to get in place things like power of attorney for finances, power of attorney for health care, the last will and testament, even a letter of last instruction where you might want to write down who to contact and what information you need for the obituary and so forth. And by the way, that's usually more complex than people realize. In other words, they want to know things like when you were married and where you graduated from and what year. Mm-hmm. And all that sort of thing, which the children that are living in California may not know. And never recognize that they're going to someday need that. So if you have a trust or if you even have a funeral arrangements, any kind of pre-planning, that kind of thing needs to be shared. So I think the more open families are and the earlier they start to talk about this, the better.
Well, here we have a situation. You know, I'm one of those baby boomers, and there are a lot of us coming through the pipeline here in the next few years that getting into that older age. And so there are a lot of us and then a lot of our children out there, too, that have to deal. And, you know, probably we should have started talking about this a while back.
Well, absolutely. You know, hindsight's, I think, always 20/20 when it comes to managing your money. But one of the things that you know, we always tell people that it's important to think about and it's never too late to try and deal with is just making sure that you're pacing yourself with your savings. If you're trying to still build up a nest egg, then, you know, think about how much you're going to have and really what that'll mean, you know, in terms of what you can do, you know, so that people don't kind of overestimate their retirement abilities and don't start living beyond their means, because it can be very hard to come back from that.
Oh, absolutely, especially later on. Favy in Woodstock, Illinois, we'll give you a chance. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you for your wonderful program and to tell you that it is good that you talk about the finances with the parents. I have my personal experience that with my parents, they help us set our finance, our economy, and we are helping them now manage their own businesses now that they're older. But we sit down and talk about all the things they want to have done and how we can help them.
And that's a good thing. And thank you very much for calling. And it's not only the finances, but where they want, how they want things distributed, perhaps. That's a very important thing, I think, to have. And not even for the large financial things, but sometimes it's the rocking chair, or maybe it's the old family picture, Karen.
Yeah, that's the reason Extension has a program called Who Will Get Grandma's Yellow Pie Plate. And that yellow pie plate just symbolizes the tangible personal property that people own that doesn't have a title. It doesn't have it's not going to be written into the will in terms of who gets that. So people need to talk about who values those things, who they mean something to, and maybe discuss family history in the process. And some families are more into that than others. I do think now people should know that if you do have a list of that tangible personal property and who should get it after you've discussed it with your daughter-in-law and son-in-law and so forth, then you can refer to that list in your will. If it's referred to in your will that there is such a list, then that list becomes legally binding, and your personal representative or executor will have a much easier time of getting that property to whomever you wanted it to go to. That's a rather new law, the fact that we can refer to that list in the will, and it's now legally binding.
Comment, Michael?
Yeah, I just think you really can't say enough how important it is that families have those conversations. You know, the money sometimes is, you know, challenging in and of itself, but, you know, there's, you know, the money is going to be something you can divide, but you can't, you know, divide the rocking chair. Mm-hmm. You can't divide the yellow pie plate. It's very hard to share those types of things. And so having those conversations, what's meaningful, can help to avoid a lot of problems later on.
Thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. Mike in Platteville, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Mike. Oops, what did I do? Push the wrong button? Let me see if I can correct that. Here we go. Hi, Mike.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
All right. I just want to stress the importance of having a good financial advisor in the relationship. There's many, many times where the children feel uncomfortable talking to parents about inheritance planning, and that's my job, is to talk to those parents about the choices and about gifting to children and what it is that they have on their heart and things like that. And also discussing, you know, what would be the best thing for the parents to spend during their life and what to give to the children, trust, charitable giving, things like that, you know.
Yep, you're raising some excellent points, and I think our guests here are nodding in approval of it, and we'll have a chance to have them respond. Thanks a lot, Mike, for calling. Karen Goebel, Family Consumer Economics Specialist, and Michael Gutter, Family Financial Management Specialist with the UW and UW Extension, our guests. They'll be with us till 12:30 today, and we'll come right back after a look at the news to talk some more about a financial advisor. Stay with us. Talking financial security in later years, this half hour with our two guests, Professor Karen Goebel, Family Consumer Economics Specialist, and Assistant Professor Michael Gutter, Family Financial Management Specialist, both in the School of Human Ecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and UW Extension Family Living Programs. Really happy to have them along. And if you have questions, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Michael, when we broke for news, we had Mike from Platteville on, who's a financial advisor himself, and I think rightfully said there's a role for financial advisors in helping kids and parents work some of these things out.
Well, absolutely. You know, I always think of a financial advisor as being you know, the person who will help you decide the strategies, help guide you through the decision-making process, if you will. And they may not necessarily be the person that would write the will or even write the trust, but they're the person that's really just there to help you decide what you want. And oftentimes, that's a really valuable service that we can have, someone who's really just wanting to make sure that we know what we need to do to make sure to accomplish the things that are most meaningful to us, to know, for example, to know that we can write this addendum to a will that will be binding. Mm-hmm. That type of information is something that that advisor would have for us.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it very much. Anne in Madison, it's your turn now. Anne, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hi. My father does not have a will just out of stubbornness. And I'm wondering, I have heard that if you don't have a will, that you pay considerably more in taxes than if you do.
What are the, well, let's answer that question, but then let's talk about the other ramifications of not having a will, if there are some. I think there are. Karen?
Well, basically, I think people want to know not only the tax implications, which, by the way, we would say that there are no more taxes, whether there's a will or not a will. The taxes are going to be based on the amount, the value of the property that you leave in that estate, whether it's, and how it passes is either by will or by the rules of intestate succession, or rules that some people would say the rules of inheritance in terms of how it passes down. If there is a surviving spouse, everything would pass to that spouse if there are no children or the children are all of this marriage. It's when you get into children that are from another relationship that things start being split, and then the property would be divided between the children of all of, let's say, his children and the spouse. Because we have a marital property system, a half of whatever you leave, if you have a spouse, would already belong to that spouse. So no one can give that away, give it away, or will it away.
Mm-hmm. Michael, to add to that?
Yeah, and then just to really respond back to that caller's question, the amount that, as Karen was mentioning, the amount that would be going to the non-spousal heirs, if you will, non-charitable and non-spousal heirs, it would need to exceed several million dollars this year to actually trigger a federal estate tax event. So, there's quite a bit of forgiveness built into the system right now that most people will not face any type of federal estate tax at this point when they would pass money to their heirs.
Now, we do have a Wisconsin inheritance tax yet for a while. And so if people have an estate of over $675,000, we tell them that they probably should think about the implications of that, given the percentages and so forth on the Wisconsin scene. But federally, it is $2 million that you can leave free from federal estate tax.
So if, let's say a person has $1 million and leaves, but it goes to all one person, the person could have written a will ahead of time and written a will so that each person, let's say, received $500,000. And in that case, you would escape any state taxes on that estate. Is that correct?
Well, actually, with both the state tax systems, it's not.
It's the whole amount.
It's the whole amount because it's the tax on the right to transfer the wealth, not on the receipt of the wealth.
Okay. And does this help? Do you have a follow up question?
I have a follow up question about power of attorneys for health care. And if you write one in one state and then you move to another state, are they still, do they remain in effect?
That's a good question as well.
Well, generally the answer involves having it checked in the new state. See if the new state will follow the guidelines that are written in the Wisconsin Power of Attorney for health care. I think it's not, if you're going to spend, this is the 6 months in Florida and 6 months in Wisconsin question, I think it's a fairly good idea to have one in Florida also. The doctors and medical staff in Florida are used to seeing the Florida statutory form. So as long as it doesn't conflict, that's significant that you want to be sure it's doing exactly what you want, and that the Wisconsin version and the Florida version,
or wherever,
are in sync with one another. But my first choice, I guess, because I know how hard it is to get people to get these filled out in the first place, and get them witnessed and so forth, that I think I would see if the doctors in your new place, if they would acknowledge that Wisconsin power of attorney for health care.
Oh, so just go to your to the father's, let's say, in this case, physicians.
I think so. Yeah. I guess I'd start
the place
with that.
To go. Okay. Ann, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Phil in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Phil.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. My father lives in Minnesota. He's in his 80s, not in very good health, has remarried since my mom died, almost 20 years ago. Certainly he's been married for some time. We're on good terms, but he is not willing to share much information at all with my brother and I about what happens upon his death. He's constantly told us that it's all written out, it's all taken care of. What rights will we have, as I said, he's remarried and lives in Minnesota, what rights will my brother and I have upon his death to not only towards what property he might have left, but I just need to understand where we go upon his death, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing to understand is that the probate on that estate will be done in Minnesota, and it will follow Minnesota law in terms of how the will is interpreted and how property passes. That's basic. And it is true that one's estate plan is personal. In other mm-hmm. words, you don't have to share what's in your will, what you've done, and so forth. Now, I am one who says I don't think there should be any secrets, because I believe that if there's going to be any misunderstandings, or people are going to think that you loved one child more than another because you treated them differently under that will, then I think you should explain all that while you're alive. So I am not one on this
keeping it secret.
Yeah, that's right. However, legally, and I'm sure his attorney would advise him that he absolutely doesn't need to share that. It will be more complicated for whoever has to do the probate on that, given that the records may not be as clear to the person trying to settle that estate as they were to the father. Mike, your comment?
The question, what if there is not a, what if, and I don't know this, I believe there is a will, but what if there isn't a will? Does everything he have passed to his current wife?
Probably. I would be my guess as a layperson. But Michael Gutter, what do you think?
Well, you know, as we kind of talked about with Wisconsin law, very much, you know, with respect to Minnesota law, it would be based upon, of course, where he was during his whole life. Did he ever live in other states while he was married? You know, those types of things can sometimes interfere, because there would be different rights given if, say, for example, in his first marriage, he was living in another state. But, you know, in general, it will be subject to whatever Minnesota's intestate laws are, which, you know, most, you know, local attorneys or such would probably be able to direct you, at least in terms of where you would find that information, or it's probably even available on many websites.
If that case were in Wisconsin, it wouldn't all pass to the new wife.
It wouldn't?
No. It would be divided. In other words, she would have her half of the marital property and his half of the marital property, along with one half of his individual property, that which he had inherited or guy had before marriage, would pass down to his children, and they would divide it equally. So
okay.
It does truly depend on the law in that state.
And just to remind everyone that the marital property would be property that was acquired during the time of marriage.
So in this case, the last 20 years or so, they've been married for 20 years, so whatever had been accrued in that 20 years would be considered marital property.
In Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin, but we don't know about Minnesota. So you're going to have to check in on that. Phil, good luck and appreciate your call. Joya in Fitchburg, it's your turn next, I believe. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for having them. I am asking, I'm a naturalized citizen in the United States from another country. And I'm wondering whether the will, if we write here, does it have to be registered with any lawyer?
If you write a will?
Yeah. A plain will. Not the advance directive, the will, you know, financial part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Does it have to be registered? Because the country I come from, it has to be registered with a lawyer or a court.
Well, generally speaking, wills do not have to be registered with anyone. Once in a while, people will leave them with the probate court for a small fee, maybe $10 or whatever. That in some counties, they will hold the will for safekeeping. The important thing is that the family knows where this most recent version of the will, and it is a signed original that you want to show up after the death, that the family knows where that is. That's why some people would put it with the probate court. Other people will put it in the safe deposit box, which is, and by the way, okay. They will always go in and see if there is a will there. Some people are concerned about who can get into a safe deposit box. But the law is that anyone who has knowledge of a will has to bring it forward. And that would be your financial institution.
Right, right. Oh. And the thing I was going to add is that probate court is actually the process where the will be validated and enforced as a result. So when we kind of think of, you know, I think the closest parallel to what you were asking about would be that actually only happens at the time of death when the will goes to probate court and as such then would be validated and then become part of the public mm-hmm. record. Prior to that, it would really be something that only the individual, a potential witness to the will might have any knowledge of.
And does a will, just as a little follow-up, if you write your own will, a good idea to have, you know, I'd go to UW Extension and take a look. I was going to do it myself and take a look at the publication on that sort of thing. If it was me, it's called Family Estate Planning in Wisconsin. I'd take a look at that one. But do you need, just off the top, do you need to have a witness to the or witnesses to sign? Two witnesses are needed, I believe, to sign.
Yeah, and they used to have to sign in the presence of the testator. That's the person making out the will, you, the individual whose will it is. But now the law has relaxed a little and says that, well, these two witnesses have to sign within a reasonable length of time. But the point is the witnesses are there to see that you're of sound mind and that you know that it is a will that you're signing and so forth.
Okay.
Witnesses which have to sign, is there a time limit within that? Like 3 months, 6 months, or 3 years?
They say a reasonable time.
Yeah, the law doesn't say what they consider reasonable, but I would say as soon as possible, and many people still go by the old rule that says they should sign at the very same time that the person, the testator, signs.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Carolyn and Dousman, it's your turn now. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. I have some suggestions that nobody's mentioned yet. First of all, if you get your parents to select a cemetery lot, or at least know where they want to bury it, then on the bank accounts, there is a form. If you sign them, pay on death. You can pay on death to your children, each child, you know, designate which child. Then also on the funeral, in Wisconsin, you do not have to be embalmed. So people who do not want to be shown would save quite a bit of money because they have what's called a disinfectant wash. Also, if they're not going to be shown and the casket's not going to be at church, you can simply have the funeral director bring the casket to the cemetery. Way back in 1969, Waukesha County had a wonderful home agent called Stacia Lonergan, and one of her classes had about giving items. Give them now. And if you can have your parents, and it takes time for some of this mental adjustment to take place, if a parent wants a particular niece, nephew, or whatever, to have an item, to give it now. Because there are horror stories of where, you know, family members have put it all to auction and nobody got what they really wanted. Yeah. Then if people do not want a written up obituary, some of the newspapers will print the memorial service, time, place, with no charge. So if cost is a factor, or here again, if people don't want to put it all in, and with the stealing of information, the ARP magazine, the last one, just had that perhaps it's not such a good idea to put everything in the obituary because people can scam and then, you know, take out credit cards, driver's license, or such for that. One more thing. If you have a house and you put it in trust for children or whoever, then that doesn't have to go through probate either. So all of these things are ideas we have learned, and within 4 weeks, we had my husband's estate completely taken care of.
Well, I thank you very much for calling, and I want to call on Michael Gutter. Let's call on you here first for some comments.
Sure, absolutely. And you know, the caller was definitely right that one of the important things to realize is that the will is just one of the methods of transfer that are offered to us at the time of death. The two other, so there's three major ways that this is accomplished: transfer by will, transfer by contract, and transfer by operation of law. The transfer by contract is really what the caller referenced, I believe, when the idea of putting someone directly on a bank account or as a beneficiary designation on life insurance or on your retirement plans, listing those people directly on those accounts as a beneficiary is a transfer by contract. And something like transfer by operation of law is the idea of jointly held property when you buy a home together and you're both owners of the home. With right of survivorship, it's an automatic bypass. Both transfers by law and transfers by contract then avoid the probate process as a result, because they don't need a will to enforce the transfer.
Thank you very much. And Karen, you wanted to add something.
Well, I would just agree that I think all of her suggestions were right on target. And I do think keeping track of what things are made payable on death, with which accounts, in other words. She talked about the POD accounts and the transfer of the TOD accounts and all those sorts of things. If the better the record-keeping system, I think the easier that estate is to settle.
Thank you again, Carolyn. I appreciate it very much. And, you know, before we get too far along, I want to just remind people about the resource fair for seniors that you will both be participating in Sun Prairie on Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. We talked about it yesterday on the show, but there's going to be a lot of great information for seniors at a very nominal fee. I think it's $10, and that includes the lunch. So I don't know if you can...
Yes. I would add that there are wonderful door prizes also.
There's all kinds of... All kinds of incentives to come.
And we are covering those topics like financial planning in later life and housing options, as well as there's a session on estate planning. There's one on long-term care. And there is one on the government assistance with health care, which is that whole concept of qualifying for medical assistance or Medicaid, and in other words, what to do if you're running out of money. They'll probably talk about spousal impoverishment, the protections that we have for spouses when the other has to go to an institution and that sort of thing, as well as my session with Glenn Lloyd, who some people know from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, is entitled Scams and Ripoffs Targeted at the Elderly. And I do want to mention that these are educational sessions. There's nobody selling anything at these. And the Colonial Club itself is a private, independent, nonprofit senior center. And they do have I've enjoyed working with them because I got acquainted with all the services that they have, which are support services for older adults. They have adult daycare. They have nutrition programs. They have supportive home care, as well as all the things you'd expect of a club, which are the meals and the computer classes and the wood shop and they even have a chorus and a band. I'm just so impressed with the whole operation. So, and this is our first annual financing your future resource fair.
And it's at the Colonial Club in Sun Prairie. And how do people, I don't happen to have a phone number or other information right in front of me. How do people?
Ideally you would call them at 837-4611.
837-4611. Okay.
Yes, but I'm sure we will take walk-ins also. Mm-hmm. So if you show up between, registration is from 8 to 9 on Saturday, the 28th, and we'll end at least by 3. Incidentally, if people have specific questions that aren't covered in the sessions they went to, the speakers will be there after lunch, and we'll have a general question-answer time for the questions that perhaps didn't get answered in the specific breakout sessions.
That's wonderful. Well, I seconded on Colonial Club. My mom was in adult daycare there for a long time and really enjoyed her stay there. very, very much. And that's this coming Saturday, right? That's all right. Well, we maybe have time for one quick question. Mary Lou in New Berlin, hi. Oh, maybe we lost Mary Lou. I'm sorry, we lost her. Well, I want to thank you both very much for being with us today, Karen and Michael. Michael, you're speaking, and your topic was Saturday. What are you talking about again? I'm sorry.
Sure. I'm going to be moderating a panel that will kind of talk about some of the financial planning and later life issues, things like money management, planning for having the right amount of cash on hand, some investment issues that come up for a lot of people, things like mutual funds versus annuities, and try and help people make some of those tough investment decisions.
Well, thank you both very much for being with us today. We should do this again down the road here. I appreciate it very much. Professor Karen Goebel, family consumer economics specialist, one of our guests. The other, Assistant Professor Mike Gutter. Michael's a family financial management specialist, both in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison and the University of Wisconsin Extension Family Living Programs. Pleasure to have them with us, and we'll talk again some more about this. Sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's pretty much always the way it works. Coming up tomorrow at 11, we visit with Robin Roth, co-author of Remodel This, A Woman's Guide to Planning and Surviving the Madness of Home Renovation. We're doing a home renovation in our own home right now, and so it's really timely for me. Then Gary Knoll stops by to reveal the wonders of Wisconsin. That contest is finally over, and the results are in, and we'll have a lot of fun talking with Gary about that. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.